Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for May 18th, 2009, and on this week's episode, we have an interview with BJ Jones, the artistic director of Northlight Theater. He'll be talking to us about their show, The Lieutenant of Inishmore. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready. And let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. My guest this week is the artistic director and the director of one of the best shows of the year, The Lieutenant of Inishmore, at Northlight Theater. Hello, BJ Jones.
How are you, Tom?
Great. Tell us about The Lieutenant of Inishmore. First, let me say it's a great show, and
thanks.
Kudos to you guys for having the chutzpah to do a show like this that is one of the most powerful pieces of theater I've seen in years.
Yeah, it's a shocker. It's and chutzpah is the right word for it. We've done three of Martin McDonagh's plays.
That's who wrote it,
Martin McDonagh. Lieutenant of Inishmore, some consider it his best and certainly the most outrageous of his works. It's wildly funny. It is pitch black. It's dangerous and audacious, and it pushes all boundaries. I saw it in London the closing night of the Royal Shakespeare's production at the Barbican in the Pit, a very small theater, directed by Chicago's Wilson Milam, who has directed a number of McDonagh's pieces. And I got to meet Mr. McDonagh, and I told him at the time that I wanted to get the Chicago rights to do it. This is while we were doing Skull and Connemara,
which I remember was a terrific show.
Yeah. Wonderful production, and I was very proud of it. And also, we did the first play I directed as artistic director here in 1999 was The Cripple of Inishman.
Okay, I remember that.
So we've done three of McDonagh's works here very successfully, and this one really is pushes the envelope, doesn't so much push it as shred the envelope of kind of usual Irish drama, if you will.
It does push it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's...
But it is very Irish.
It's very Irish. It's very funny.
Yes.
Wickedly funny. It's outsized. It's a farce. It's a black farce. It's almost a genre in and of itself. It mimics Quentin Tarantino and Sam Peckinpah in terms of its violence quotient. We all know that the violence is staged, and there's a lot of stage blood and body parts. But
it's magnificently done, yeah.
We brought in one of the most amazing stage effects guys working in the business today. His name is Steve Tolan. He's located in Pittsburgh. He's done, I think this is his 10th production of it. He's done it in Peru.
Wow.
He really knows how to do these stage effects. And if for nothing else, his stage effects are worth the price of admission.
I agree.
Because they're you don't see the strings.
Yeah.
And
well, one thing in film, in a Tarantino film, you know, they can do it over and over again, and
sure,
they got all kinds of, you know, things that they do that, you know, it's artificial.
But yeah,
on stage, it's stunning.
Yeah.
Even though you kind of know it's coming in a way, you know,
yeah,
when it happens, it really shows you what theater can do to reach right into your soul.
Yeah, and this is, we've done this a little differently than other productions. Not a lot of people are aware of that. When this was done, for instance, in London and New York, actually all the other productions that Steve has done too, there are first of all, there's an act break. There are nine scenes. There's an act break. And although there's no intermission called for in the script, so I didn't put one in. I think we're the first to.
That's a good idea. You kept
the
motion
momentum
going. The momentum, yes.
That's right. And secondly, there are blackouts. written into the script, and I didn't honor those. I did it more cinematically. The script feels like a movie, and so I wanted the play to feel like a movie, to sort of mimic the roots of the Quentin Tarantino or Sam Peckinpah kind of quality to it. So one scene for our production flows into the next, creating a kind of momentum for the play that hasn't been felt before.
I agree with you. So many productions have all these blackouts where they're moving furniture or whatever they're doing, and it does. It hurts. It slows things down.
Artistically, I'm glad you said that. Artistically, I feel the same way. Whether I'm a child of film and television, that may be the case, but I always, and I did this with Grey Gardens as well, I rarely, if ever, use stagehands to remove furniture or to shift scenes. If anything, I try and have the actors, quote-unquote, bust their own tables, if you will, so that the world of the play stays within the world of the play. It's stylistic on my part, but I'm very conscious of trying to keep the play and the world of the play self-contained.
And that adds such a good, strong effect to the place, too.
Yeah.
That's good advice to young directors.
Well, it works for me, but it might not for somebody else. However, I think I see it in other young directors' work. They try and keep the play self-contained.
What's been the reaction of this play?
Oh, we've gotten everything from... this is horrifying, this is disgusting, I've never seen anything like it, too. I've never seen anything like it, congratulations. It's one for one. For every sort of horrified, shocked email or letter we get, which, by the way, has been far less than we anticipated. We actually anticipated greater outrage, a pitchfork and bonfire kind of assault on the building. There's been none of that. We have had people who have complained. We are, after all, out in the suburbs. We do have an older audience, a more sedate audience. You know, we are a theater that produces classics as well.
Yes, you do. Some great musicals.
And some great musicals. Lady Windermere's Fan, Pride and Prejudice, Chalk Garden. Bill Brown did Chalk Garden for us. She Stoops to Conquer. We've done a lot of, you know, classic work as well. And a suburban, older state audience, you know, comes to appreciate that. This is as edgy, as dark as anything in modern theater today. And even though the play was written in 1994. So for our older, more conservative audience, it's a jolt. On the other hand, my older, you know, I have a very savvy audience.
Yes, you do.
They're college educated. They may be older, but they're college educated by and large.
And they've seen hundreds of plays.
Hundreds of plays. And they're very discerning and discriminating. My audience subscribes to Steppenwolf, Goodman, Chicago Shakespeare, Writers, Court. We all share the same audience base, and so they've had tremendous experience in the theater. So they, you know, this is as edgy as anything many of them have seen, and you'd be surprised how many of my older subscribers have lauded us for pushing the envelope.
Good, yeah. Good. Well, I think we all get tired of the same things. Plus, you're doing what theater does best, and that is just carry you into the play. I mean, I was about... When some of those scenes happened, I was about ducking because I thought the gunshots were heading my way, and I wanted to go down there and just hit them over the head. I mean, you get involved in it. I think every young person should see it. And some people told me I was crazy when I said, if I had a teenage son or daughter, I'd bring them to this play. Because with all of the teen violence that's going on, if they were to see what a folly, how stupid it all is, because that's really, I think, one of the major points he's making, and see it on stage and not have to see it on the street. I think it's rather...
Well, they're looking at it in their video games, and they're certainly going to see movies. I mean, I sat through some previews of some films. I went to see my nephew. He said, come on, BJ, Uncle BJ, let's go see Star Trek. So I went to see Star Trek, and the previews for Star Trek were nowhere near as... I mean, they were all much more violent than what I'm seeing on my stage right now. And this is in the movie theater, and there's all these 10-year-old, 12-year-old kids sitting in the house. So, yeah. You know, here's the thing about Lieutenant Minishmore has a point. There is increased terrorism going on in Ireland right now.
Yeah, I see that. It's the peace is kind of fading away, isn't it?
It is. And some feel that it's tied to the erosion of the economic stability and growth that Ireland experienced over the Celtic Tiger.
Could be because, yeah, they were doing so very well.
Yes,
yeah.
The leading economy in Europe for the last 10 years. And so at any rate, the troubles seem to be bubbling up again. This play speaks to those issues. There is a certain degree of desensitization, shall we say, with regard to violence in our society. And we know this. It's not just in more troubled neighborhoods, economically stressed neighborhoods. It's everywhere. There are shootings going on in Wilmette and Evanston.
That's true.
A stabbing of a police officer down the street from me in Evanston just last week. And this play is, to a certain extent, about the desensitization towards violence. But in doing this play, what we are inviting our audience to do is become resensitized to their desensitization. This is about resensitizing you, both to, through the theatrical experience, both to violence, not just in Ireland, but nationally. And not to mention the fact that the play is over the top and funny, and
the strange combination of heads flying, blood splattering, and you're laughing.
Yeah, the
that's amazing.
Stylistically, that's very hard to achieve.
I think it's almost impossible. I can't remember another play that had that was as dark and as funny.
And that's a tribute to our cast. They're extraordinary performers,
and to you, to your direction, the way you pace the show.
Well, I'm very proud of our production, and I'm very grateful to Tim Evans, our executive director, and to the staff and to the board for getting behind the effort to put this on. Because it's, in many ways, we are rattling our subscribers, we know that, but we're rattling them in a way that it's a good thing that they're writing us letters. It's a good thing that they're reacting
to us. Sure, you're getting feedback, yeah.
Sure, it gives us an opportunity to have a meaningful conversation. You know, so many times, subscribers walk into a theater, they see a play, they go home, they go to bed, they don't even think about it again. They're thinking about this, they're thinking about it in a meaningful way, and they're thinking... Nobody else in town had the guts to do this show.
That's true.
A lot of times I feel Northlight is not recognized for taking the many risks that we do take. We are at times perceived as a suburban theater with a suburban audience, but we have challenged them time and time again, and they have risen to that challenge. Grey Gardens, a show I was incredibly proud to do and proud of, was not your happy-go-lucky Christmas musical.
No, it wasn't.
And
it was a pretty dark show.
It was a dark show, and it was beautiful and heartbreaking. It did have a lot of humor in it, but it was very brave of us to do that show, especially when other people are doing Christmas Carol and Christmas Story and It's a Wonderful Life. So we have, a lot of times I don't think as a suburban theater we get the kind of recognition from the audience.
I agree with you. It's one of the reasons I wanted to do this interview, because I've always been proud of your work here. And I don't view you as a suburban theater, although you have the advantages of suburbs. You have free parking.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of restaurants around. It's easy to get to.
Yeah.
But are these shows attracting younger subscribers and younger audience members?
More and more, we are seeing our age group come down.
Great.
And shows like Grey Gardens, believe it or not, Lieutenant of Inishmore, which is selling pretty well, Mauritius.
That was awesome.
Awesome show.
Yeah.
Jekyll and Hyde, even. These are bringing our audience age group down. We are starting to appeal to the next generation of theater goer. Frequently, they are not as prone to purchasing subscriptions as their parents were, because they value their last minute decision making process. It costs them more to make that decision at the last minute.
But ahead of your schedule on?
Yes, we are. We're
on subscriptions.
We've hit our. We're 100% of our goal towards renewing our subscriptions. And this is what, May 14th.
That's fabulous, yes. Especially in this down economy. That means people appreciating what you're doing.
Yeah, and we just dropped our brochure. We've got a spectacular season lined up. It's our 35th anniversary season, Tom. And people will, by subscribing to Northlight, remember why they enjoyed coming to Northlight. We're doing some new work.
Well, let's go into that.
Why not?
Yeah. Because I know you're doing one of my favorite plays.
But which one?
Awake and Sing.
Well, let's start talking about that.
That's one of my all-time favorite. That is a great piece of theater.
It's a beautiful play, and this is the exact right time, I think, to do Awake and Sing, especially with the blue ribbon cast and director that we have, Amy Morton, from the Steppenwolf Ensemble, who was a Tony nominee for August Osage County.
Fabulous actor and a great director.
Great director and an old friend will be piloting the project, starring Roddy Reed, who did Retreat from Moscow for us, if you recall. And, of course, our first artistic director, Mike Nussbaum, who at 85 years old is still putting the ball over the wall, over the ivy on Waveland.
Isn't he amazing?
He redefines. He's everybody's role model in Chicago.
Yeah, I agree.
And I've worked with Mike since I was 28 years old.
I go back to a play that you and Mike did years ago. Someone to Watch Over
Someone
Me.
To Watch Over
in the
Me.
Little, in the little space you had in Evanston.
Yeah, at the Coronet Movie Theater. It's an old Balaban and Katz movie theater. It's not there anymore. There's a condo there now, as there is everywhere.
Yeah. Everything's condo.
Everything's condo.
But you have quite a variety. One of your early shows is tell us about this. A new off-Broadway musical?
Marvelous Wonderettes has been running for, I don't know, 10 months off-Broadway. Even during the strike, the Broadway strike, Marvelous Wonderettes thrived off-Broadway. It ran 2 years in Los Angeles and won all the Dramalog Awards. It's a wonderful, funny, silly musical about a girls' doo-wop group in 1958 and 1968, 10 years later. It's their senior dance, and they're asked to sing, and then 10 years later,
yeah,
they do their
And it's got all those cute old hokey songs from the
great, 50s. Great songs with astonishing arrangements, really gorgeous. I mean, and we have four wonderful women, including Tempe Thomas.
Oh, Tempe,
and
sure.
Kat Davis. And Tempe Thomas, of course, did Grey Gardens for us, and she's wonderful.
She's a major star.
It's directed by Roger Bean, who created it, and they're putting a new cast in New York.
It's another coup for you.
It's kind of. Yeah. And we're hoping it has a long and healthy life here in Chicago. The second show was a wonderful Broadway hit called Souvenir. It's about Florence Foster Jenkins.
Well, that's the lady that couldn't sing.
Yes,
and she thought she could. You got to tell us that, because I've heard.
You know, she sang off key, and she ended up singing in Carnegie Hall, and Tallulah Bankhead. It is rumored at one of her concerts that Carnegie Hall was rumored that she was carried out of the theater. She was laughing so hard. And it's a wonderfully touching, moving experience. It's very funny, wildly funny.
And isn't it told from the point of view of her accompanist?
Her accompanist is named.
And this is based on
is
a Cosme. True story, right?
Yeah, it is a true story. And he was a real person. And you know, he had a sort of faltering music career, and she came across him, and he couldn't believe that this woman actually thought she sang beautifully, but she did. And there's this one glorious moment at the end of the play where she sings Ave Maria, and you hear it as she hears herself, and it's transportive. It's really it's a beautiful piece of theatrical fantasy.
How do you cast a show like that? Because I would assume you have to pick some, you know, a singer, but how do you sing bad if you're a singer? You know,
it's not easy. So we're in the process of doing that now. But several wonderful performers have done it across the country, and we're going to be working on casting that soon.
That'll be quite a challenge.
Yeah. And then, of course, Awake and Sing. And then finally, well, not finally, but John Mahoney will join us again to do A Life by Hugh Leonard. A Life is a beautiful Irish play that is the sequel to Da.
Oh, I remember Da, yeah. Yeah. That was a moving play.
Yeah. Yeah. And A Life was done on Broadway with Barnard Hughes probably 25 years ago. Hugh Leonard died this year.
Oh, did he?
He was a prolific Irish playwright.
Yeah.
And his play, The O'Pair Man, was in our very first season at Northlight when we were the Evanston Theatre Company. So it's our 35th anniversary. It's the right play for Mr. Mahoney, who our audience adores.
Oh, yes.
You know, John was at Northlight back. He did What the Butler Saw. He did The Price. He did a lot of shows for Northlight back in the old days when Steppenwolf was still up in Highland Park. And
I didn't realize that because I associate him so much with Steppenwolf.
Yeah, he goes.
But he worked all over town, too.
All over town. And he's been very loyal to Northlight over the years. Better Late that he and Mike Nussbaum did last year for us. And that was, we were taken to the Galway Art Festival last year.
How was that? How did they
sold
enjoy
out.
It?
Sold out. And they love John there. And he loves Galway. At one time, he had a house there.
Oh, cool.
But he couldn't get out. He couldn't get to Ireland enough to enjoy it because he worked so much. So this is a beautiful play. It's the right kind of role for him. And it's about two couples, both when they met in their late teens and early 20s, and at the end of their life in their 60s. And it goes back, and stylistically it's very interesting, structurally it goes back and forth between the two age groups.
Which is difficult to do on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I could see him doing well. Yeah. John's been hot lately.
John,
and then I see you're doing another blues show, because that's the other thing that audiences have to appreciate that Northlight does. You bring these innovative shows. You've done the Ella
I'm
show.
I'm interested in your perspective. Tell me about that.
The Ella show was awesome. And I like the bluegrass one.
Fire on the Mountain.
Fire on the Mountain. But the blues show you did was the best blues show. I think I remember saying in my review, when the run is over, because I know you have a subscription on it, you have to move on to the next show, you should just take this thing downtown and would run a year.
Well, we'd love to. And, of course, this has Mississippi Charles Bevel in it, who was also in Ain't Nothing But the Blues and in Fire on the Mountain. He won two Jeff Awards.
That's right.
And Randy Myler, who created both of those other shows, came to me and said, hey, I've got an idea for another blues show. And this has really, this is the essence of rock and roll blues. It's all sort of innuendo, and because rock and roll is a sort of sexual sexual term, and sort of
and the old original blues was very much that way.
Yeah, and it's not raunchy in the extreme sense at all. It's just suggestive and in a fun winking way,
sort of like Ain't Misbehavin' in that
very
kind of
mold? Right. That's okay. Exactly right. Okay. And
because I remember the first blues show you did, I remember the audience where I was sitting. I could see three quarters of the audience. And what was cool about it is they were, since, you know, you have an older audience, it was an opening night, they were like sitting there and like, hey, this is pretty good. And they weren't moving. And then just before the end of the act, they're all toe-tapping. It took a while to get into it, but once they did, they were just so into it. And I have not seen a show affect it, or, you know, take them from literally like, oh, well, another show, and they just got so into it.
Yeah, and that's this particular show is called Low Down Dirty Blues. Okay. And, of course, it's the same creative team, so we can expect the same high level of performance and the same kind of earthy momentum that...
each one sounds like, when you see it, it's like somebody's show, you know, their once-in-a-lifetime show. And then they come up with another one with a totally different topic and do the same kind of thing with it.
Yeah, I'm very excited to get Randy back because he's, and you know, it says something about our audience and performing in Chicago that he would call me first, because he's got theaters all over the country who are pounding on his door to do these shows. And
well, he knows you'll treat them right.
we treat him right, and he's come to know and love our audience. This, once again, speaks to, you know, people say, well, your audience is older. Our audience is really, they have been so encouraging over the years and accepting. We pushed the envelope on them several times. They've gone with us, and they snap right back. Just in terms of historical perspective, we have something called Theater Communications Group. It's an association of theaters, not unlike Northlight and Goodman and Steppenwolf. We all belong to it, and they do surveys and so forth. You know, we renew at anywhere from 86% to 90% every year.
That's
among the highest in the nation.
Yeah,
we renew
amazing.
Our first-year subscribers at 50%. That is the highest in the nation. So we are very fortunate. We have a loyal, intelligent fan base, if you will, and we're very lucky to have them.
Well, that's good. And you don't disappoint them. So you sort of have the green light to challenge them.
Yeah, no, I don't know if the lieutenant is. Maybe we got to yellow on this one. But
you got to push it. And so one of the lessons for other theater groups is don't be afraid to challenge your audience. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree. The difference between sitting at home and watching your television or going to, and I have nothing against commercial theater, of course. We all, frankly, aspire to want to see our plays, as we discussed, go from here to someplace else and seek a wider audience. But we have a certain mission, and Northlight's mission is to reflect and challenge the values and beliefs of the community we serve. And this time we're challenging. And in many cases with Lieutenant, we are actually reflecting the sensibilities of a certain aspect of our audience base, and that's my job.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a great job of it. Let's talk about your background a little bit.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Because I remember, a lot of people don't realize, besides being a heck of a director, you're a very strong actor.
Yeah.
And I particularly remember a show, you got to tell me about it, Royal Family at
Steppenwolf, yeah.
Where, folks, there were how many artistic directors and known directors in that show? I believe there was like 5 or 6 artistic directors, at least
well,
eight or nine.
I don't know about that, but we had, it was Amy Morton, and myself, and Frank Allotti directed, right. Rondi Reed was in it, David New was in it, Yasin Pienkoff was in it, Lois Smith was in it. It was a sort of meta-theatrical in the sense that it was celebrating theater, as you know.
Yes, yeah. It was the Barrymore family, really,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the Barrymore family. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a huge, beautiful show.
Yeah,
we had two big St. Bernards that David New walked on stage with at the end of the play and brought the house down. And of course, one of them felt the need to relieve himself on Lois Smith's chair on his entrance window.
That live was, theater.
Yeah, and poor Yasin Pienkoff had to clean it up. God love him. But I got to do The Guys down at the Goodman. We co-produced, which was memorial of 9/11, which is about a fire chief who writing eulogies for guys in his firehouse.
You've done some television and some films.
I did, yeah. I've been on Law & Order, an early edition, And I did Body Double for Brian De Palma. So I had a full career as an actor as well as a director before.
Are you still an actor?
When I'm asked, and I have been asked, but it's very hard to do this job. The last thing I was in was Permanent Collection here. With Harry Lennox.
Mm-hmm. That was another one of those. You go to it, you're not sure what to expect, and the script was so strong.
So strong, and we love Tom Gibbons. We also did B. Luther Hatchie, which was about the right of someone to write a piece of fiction, whether it's or co-opt someone's identity. It was about a white man writing in the voice of a black female.
Wow.
And the outrage inherent in that. And who? What does a writer have? Yeah. What kind of right does a writer have?
But we've gone past that because there have been a few terrific plays written by white people that were with all black characters.
Yeah,
yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Yes.
But Barack Obama actually came to see Permanent Collection
when
we did it here. Yeah, that was, and he was, it was his first year as a Illinois senator, and he brought his wife, Michelle, and they came downstairs. It was wonderful.
Well, maybe you'll get to see him again.
You know, you never know.
Yeah.
He lives in town, I hear, on occasion.
Yeah. I don't think he's been back for a while, but he will be back.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us now, in the few remaining minutes we have, what kind of things you want to do at Northlight that you haven't done, that you sort of have, you know, a goal to do?
We have a reading series, which we started 3 years ago through the generosity of one of our board members, Tim Sullivan, called Interplay, which allows us to do on Monday nights 4 or 5 readings staged on our stage. And we have about 100 subscribers now. Think about that, 100 people on Monday night here in Skokie to come and see a play that they don't know the name of when they show up frequently. And then they give feedback. They talk to the author. We have cocktails and hors d'oeuvres afterwards. And it's been wildly successful for us. Out of that, we've had a play like, for instance, Lady by Craig Wright, mm-hmm. which ended up to be on our main stage. I commissioned Lady for Mike Shannon, and then it ended up off Broadway at Rattlestick last year. We did a play called These Shining Lives, which I commissioned, which was in our Interplay series and was done by Rivendell. I don't know if you
that
got to
awesome.
See it.
Awesome. I absolutely love that
yeah.
play.
And we commissioned that.
Oh, that's right.
And it
yeah.
was in our Interplay
I remember,
series.
Yeah, because when I was went to see that show, I like Rivendell's works. You know, if you like somebody's work, you cover all of them.
Right.
And I was just absolutely blown away, as were, I think, most of the reviewers in town.
Yeah, it was terrific. Yeah. And the same thing is true with, we commissioned Brett Nevue's Gas for Less, which
yes.
Dexter Bullard directed down at the Goodman
yeah.
Studio.
He's a real talent and a very very nice person.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good play.
Yeah. So we've had tremendous success with Interplay, and
can writers submit to you, or how does the process go?
We do. We go out and talk to some of the local writers, and writers do submit. This year we did a play called Laura Shellhart's play called Auctioning the Ainsleys, which was very successful, very interesting play. Rajiv Joseph did a play called, and he's from New York, his play Bengal Tiger was just done at the Taper.
Okay.
And we did a play of his called The North Pool.
So you considered very important new works.
Development.
Development.
No, there's no question that, you know, we commissioned and did A Marvelous Party, if you'll recall, which was
yes.
the Noel Coward musical,
yes.
which won 4 Jeff Awards, and
that was dynamite.
And that's
yes.
been done all over the country now.
Has it really?
Yeah, it's been done all over the country. And
you got to bring it back sometime. It's a great show.
It's a great show.
Or talk Drury Lane, Kyle DeSantis into
yeah,
doing it.
Yeah, that'd be that. Yeah, it might be might have given me an idea there, Tom, because it was a real audience pleaser, as well as you know, having the imprimatur of Noel Coward. We're also very proud of the fact, I don't know if you probably remember, Judith Ivy did The Lady with All the Answers,
oh,
the
yes.
Ann Landers
yes.
that I directed.
I mean, it's scary. She looked like Ann Landers. Yeah. I mean, it was very good.
Well, her daughter came to opening night, as did Roger Ebert, because Ann Landers introduced Roger Ebert to his wife, so he was here opening night as well.
Oh, cool.
And just loved it.
I was there opening night, but I don't remember seeing him there. But
well, he was in the back.
Okay.
We're going to be doing that at Cherry Lane this fall in New York.
Very good.
Yeah, and Judith's going to recreate the role in New York. So we have a lot coming up. We're very excited about it.
All right. We're almost out of time. Tell us, Lieutenant of Inishmore, what days it runs. A little commercial for it. What yep. days it runs.
It's Tuesday through Sunday. Shows are at 7:30, 8 o'clock on the weekends, 2:30 in the afternoons, 1 o'clock on Wednesday afternoons. And our phone number is 847-673-6300. That's the box office.
Plus, they can go on the internet, too. On
Always.
www.northlight.org.
Org.
Okay, and get tickets. And it runs through June 7th, right?
Yes, unless we sell enough tickets that we can keep it running.
Well, let's hope so.
We'd love that.
Great. Well, stay tuned for that. And BJ, thank you so much.
Tom, I appreciate you.
And folks, Northlight Theater is one of those theaters that if they have a show, just get a ticket for it. And then after you do that, then ask them what the show's about, because you're going to see a good show.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. And folks, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of May 18th, 2009. The Jeff Awards have announced that Arlene Crudson, the artistic director of the Pegasus Players, will receive a special award honoring her outstanding contributions to the Chicago theater scene at the 36th Annual Non-Equity Jeff Awards Ceremony held on June 8th. Arlene Crudson founded Pegasus Players back in 1978 and has directed many productions there. She taught classic theater on the PBS station Channel 11 and then went on to publish A Study to Classic Theater. She also served for many years as a professor at Truman College. She has been a mainstay of Chicago theater for three decades and has literally brought Pegasus's unique mission to people all over the world. After her 30 years with Pegasus Players, which has garnered over 70 Jeff Awards along the way, she will be retiring. The 36th anniversary of the Non-Equity Jeff Awards will be held at a ceremony on June 8th of this year. For more information on Arlene Crudson and the Jeff Award nominees, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Tony Award winners Nathan Lane and Bebe Neuwirth will star as Gomez and Morticia in The Addams Family, a new musical based on the bizarre and beloved family of the characters created by cartoonist Charles Addams. The Addams Family will play a limited engagement here in Chicago, with performances beginning on Friday, November 13th at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts. All of this will be prior to opening on Broadway next April. The plot involves the daughter Wednesday, who is now 18, experiencing a sensation that surprises and disgusts her, caring about another person. Young Pugsley begs her to keep torturing him, while Mother Morticia fears being upstaged and discarded. All the while, Father Gomez would prefer that everything and everyone remain as it is. But when outsiders come to dinner, the events of one night will forever change this iconic family. Charles Addams created several thousand cartoons, sketches, and drawings over the past six decades, many of which were published in The New Yorker. But it was his creation known as the Addams Family that brought him his greatest acclaim. The family served as the inspiration for multiple television series and motion pictures, and now tickets for the Addams Family musical are available to groups of 20 or more. But individual tickets will go on sale to the general public on Friday, May 29th, so get ready. Again, that's Friday, May 29th. Provision Theater has signed a four-year contract to take over the 200-seat theater inside the former Duncan YMCA, the Chernin Center for the Arts, making them one of the few and perhaps only theaters in the South Loop area. The new space can be seen on June 12th at an open house. The first show in the new space will be a remount of their hit, The Cotton Patch Gospel. This new area will allow them to include a real gospel choir this time. For more information on Provision Theater's season in their new space, stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News Podcast. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank BJ Jones for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.